Chapter 2, Looking Out for the Boogeyman.
When you start an investigation that involves a victim, you need to know and understand who your victim is. And this is something we call the victimology. It's the science of the victim, the study of the victim. Who were they? Where did they go? Where did they live? Where did they bank? What doctors did they use? What were their hobbies? So I spent a lot of time taking a look at who all the victims were up here in Northern California, even down in Southern California, trying to find some common thread as to, did they all know each other? Did they all run in the same social circles? Did they have similar occupations? I truly believe there are victims that he chose because he had interactions with them.
Before we continue the story of how Paul Hose discovered the East Area Rapist case files, almost by happenstance, we need to tell you what was in those case files, what happened to the victims, and how the original investigators on the East Area Rapist case discovered they had a serial offender and did everything in their power to catch him. There are 50 police reports, one for each time the East Area Rapist attacked. Most of them were from Sacramento County. Paul found 8 case files, one for each of the 8 attacks that happened in Contra Costa County. But the most important information in all these case reports came from the victims themselves. They were the only witnesses to these crimes. One key question that the investigators tried to answer was, how did the East Area Rapist choose his victims? At random, or did he know them? A handful of his attacks were opportunistic, meaning he might see someone and on the spur of the moment decide he's going to rape them. But the vast majority of his rapes were premeditated and carefully planned, possibly for months. So investigators realized that if they could figure out how he chose those victims, it could lead them to who he was. Jane Carson, who in 1976 was getting her bachelor's degree in nursing, became the 5th victim of the East Area Rapist. Her husband was an officer in the Air Force and worked at McClellan Air Force Base nearby. Jane believed the rapist might have seen her at the Air Force Officers Club. It's 6:30 in the morning on October 5th, 1976, when a nameless, faceless man breaks into Jane's home in Citrus Heights, a middle-class neighborhood of Sacramento County, California. This is the 5th attack of the East Area Rapist, but it's the first time that investigators realize they're dealing with a serial rapist.
My name is Jane Carson Sandler. I was the 5th victim of the East Area Rapist Golden State Killer. It was 6:30 in the morning on October 5th, 1976. My son, my 3-year-old son, came and got in bed with me to snuggle, which was a usual routine. I heard the garage door close, and I knew my husband had left for work. But within a few minutes, there was a flashlight shining down the hall and someone running down the hall. And I thought, what on earth did my husband forget? And then I realized, hey, he didn't forget anything. He wouldn't have a flashlight in his hand. And, you know, within seconds, I looked up and there was a man standing there with a ski mask on, holding a large butcher knife. And I was able to see that he had black gloves, a black or brown leather jacket, and these black high-top sneakers. I had no time to react. Even if I had had a gun, I would not have time to reach it. It was that quickly that he ran down the hall. So he shined this bright light in my face and immediately said to me in clenched teeth, shut up or I'll kill you, shut up or I'll kill you. My heart began racing. I was in a complete panic. At first I thought, oh, you know, I knew nothing about the East Area Rapist. I had no thoughts of being raped at that point. I thought, well, you know what? Maybe he's just going to rob us and he's going to leave. Well, my thoughts quickly changed about that because he tied us up. He had shoelaces with him. And not only did he tie and gag and blindfold me, but he also gagged and blindfolded and tied up my 3-year-old son. Then I remember him, of course, opening up my dresser drawers. And I don't remember where he got the cloth from or the sheets from or the towels from, but I do remember for the longest time he stood at the bedside. Even though I couldn't see him, I could hear him tearing the sheets, tearing the towels so methodically, tearing, tearing, tearing. And I'm thinking, what is he going to do with these? Is he going to hang us? Is he going to strangle us? What is his purpose? Maybe he's just thinking about his next move. I had no idea. I was so, so scared. Well, then he untied my ankles. And at that point, I knew he was there to rape me. But that wasn't what I was so fearful about. What caused the overwhelming fear at that point was trying to nudge my son next to me, and he was gone. I had no idea where he had taken him. What did you do with my son? Oh, my God, where is my son? What have you done? What have you done? So when he raped me, I don't even remember it, because the whole time I'm thinking, where's my son? I wish I could have screamed, but I was gagged. I prayed, Lord, where's my son? Well, after the rape, he did put my son back next to me. And my goodness, what a relief that was. I'll never forget it, just feeling him there. I didn't know if he was, I couldn't see him, but I could feel him. I could feel that he was breathing. And then he went into the kitchen. And he started rattling pots and pans. And I think, oh my God, this guy has just raped me. And now he's fixing something for himself in the kitchen. Oh, it was so sick. It was so crazy. So it was all about fear. Then he'd come back from the kitchen and he'd say, if I hear anything, I'm going to come back and kill you. And I felt he really meant that. And then he was back in the kitchen again. I don't know how long it was, maybe an hour, hour and a half, and I was finally able to get my blindfold down a little bit, and I saw that it was getting light, and I hadn't heard anything from him, but I just didn't know if he was still in the house. He could have been standing there staring at me. I had no idea. So I finally got my blindfold down and looked at my son, and he was asleep. Oh my God, he was asleep. How long he had been asleep, I'm wondering. I said, come on, we've got to get out of here. We've got to go. We've got to go. Not knowing if he was still in the kitchen, if not knowing he was still in the house, we took that risk. Got out of bed, ankle still kind of tied, hobbled down the hall, went around to the front door, and that was blocked by a chair he had propped up under the handle. The screen door out to the patio was opened. So we hobbled around to the left to the fence and screamed for a neighbor. I gave inspectors at that time a few names of possible suspects, but of course none of them panned out. I remember a bartender at the McClellan Officers Club was on my list because of the way he stared at me one night. The rapist had said to me during the attack, "You look so good at the O Club." I'll never forget that. And right away I thought to myself, this guy must have had a military background, because a layperson would have said Officers Club, not O Club. Why did he choose me? Had he stalked me for a long time? Had he seen me at possibly at the Officers Club? Had he seen me in the neighborhood? Had he seen me down at Travis Air Force Base in Fairfield, where I was doing my military reserve duty? I had no idea.
When police arrive at each East Area Rapist crime scene, the first thing they try to do is talk with the female victim. The information the victim provides could be critical in catching the rapist. But the women have just been violated in the worst way. In Jane's case, the last thing she wanted to do was share the intimate details of her attack with a man, even if he was a police officer.
Two police officers arrived, male. I didn't want to really talk to them and tell them what had just happened. And then Carol Daly came, my angel.
I had no intention of going into law enforcement. I hadn't even thought about it because it just wasn't what women were doing. I looked at the salary was double what I was making, and I said, why not? So I took the test, and at the time, 35 women applied. And out of that, I think about 12 of us passed. And out of the 12, some backed out, didn't want it, some were eliminated. And that was the start of my career. We're not in uniform because there were nothing but men's uniforms for us when we came on.
From Jane Carson's attack onward, Carol worked every Sacramento County East Area Rapist case. After a rape, a woman's body is treated like a crime scene. To preserve the evidence, she's asked not to bathe. Carol single-handedly helped each victim through this traumatic aftermath.
When you think about rape victims and you think about trauma that they have just been violated in absolutely the worst way, and now here they are, some of them naked and some of them just in a short nightgown, are having to hop out front and holler for help. So when you think about victims, it's just that trauma, officers arriving and you're naked and putting a blanket or something around you, and then you have to go to the hospital.
She took me to the emergency room in Sacramento, and on the way, she was just so kind and so caring, and she understood, I think, what I had just been through. But when we got to the emergency room, she sat with me for the longest time.
I doubt there was any time that they were seen right away. I think our waits at the hospital were always an hour or two. So it was a time where I could sit down and take my statement and get as much information as I could. The East Area Rapist, when he was attacking Jane, said, oh, I saw you dancing at the officers' club. And then, of course, when he's raping her, he said, do it like you do for the captain. So he knew a lot about his victims. And so we needed to know a lot about their background. Where do you get your hair done? Where do you shop? Where do you bank? What are your extracurricular activities? Where do you work? Where do you go to lunch at work?
She asked me every detail you can imagine about the rapist and every detail of the rape.
I called it looking for the boogeyman because, you know, we didn't know who he was and we didn't know when he would show up or what would happen. Jane was actually the first one to talk about what a small penis the rapist had. Of course, Jane was a nurse, and she's thinking anatomy, she's thinking about, you know, the attack on her, but it was something that stuck through all of the cases because that was a comment that several of the victims would make about what a small penis he had.
I'll never forget having to go into the department and look at mug books, mug shots, to see if I recognized anyone. And of course, I didn't. He had a ski mask on, but was there any photos in there of anyone that I may have known in the past? And that was really a creepy experience. After the attack, my husband and I were, we were just terrified, not knowing if he would return and when. And we didn't get a good night's sleep for months. Even though we had this really expensive alarm system in the house, and also a buzzer behind my bed. Every night, my husband, my son, and I, we snuggled together in bed, but our sleep was disrupted so often because there were helicopters hovering overhead with their light beams flashing in the neighborhoods in search of the East Area Rapist. I have to say that I was really fortunate to be number 5 because from then on, he became much more violent.
After the attack on Jane Carson, investigators realize they have a serial rapist on their hands because his MO has become so clear. They name him the East Area Rapist because most of his attacks occur on the east side of Sacramento. He preys on women and teenage girls. He prefers to attack in the middle of the night, slip in through a sliding glass door or window, creep into the bedroom where his victim is sleeping, and shine a flashlight into her face, blinding her. He disguises himself behind a mask and wears gloves to avoid leaving fingerprints. He doesn't use his normal voice, but speaks in a harsh, muffled growl. He binds his victim's hands and feet with shoelaces or other materials. He blindfolds them. He ransacks their house, but doesn't steal anything of value. If his attack goes the way he wants it to, he'll stay for hours and rape his victim repeatedly. He'll eat their food, drink their beer. He'll talk to himself. He'll move back and forth around the house, opening drawers, walking into rooms and closets, and rummaging around. He'll frequently return to where his victim is tied up and threaten her. He'll quietly wait to make them think he's gone, tempting them to move or speak. When they do, he'll pounce and threaten them again, sometimes with a knife. Some months he attacks frequently, up to 4 times. Other months, he's quiet. He attacks often in certain neighborhoods on Sacramento's east side, but occasionally ventures farther away to attack, then retreats to his favorite neighborhoods on the east side to attack again. In the beginning, he attacks lone females. If the woman is married, as Jane Carson was, he waits until the husband goes to work. But eventually, the East Area Rapist begins attacking when the husbands are home. He tells the wife to bind the husband tight. Then the East Area Rapist binds the woman himself and moves her into another room, returning to the bedroom to place dishes on the man's back as an alarm system. He then goes back to the wife and rapes her. And as the attacks continue month after month, investigators struggle to identify a primary suspect.